some special guests. Good. Welcome. On this side also. Welcome. Mayapur and Vrindavan are both manifest simultaneously. Good. Very nice to have you all here. So, tonight we'll continue. Chapter 65. Chapter 65 is called Lord Balaram Visits Vrindavan. Okay. So it's a significant chapter because the 10th canto ultimately is emphasizing Krishna's relationship with the Brijbasis. Primarily, the 10th canto is about Krishna and his relationship with Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan. And even when Krishna appears to leave Vrindavan and goes to Mathura and Dwarka, still Vrindavan is the central focus. So that is always the meditation that we hold when we're studying the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And in particular, this chapter, which is later on when Krishna is in Dwarka, this particular chapter, Lord Balaram goes directly back to Vrindavan and the Brijbasis reappear. So it's a significant chapter, and it's an important chapter, and it's a very relishable chapter. So we'll continue tonight, verses 13 to 23. Tomorrow night we'll continue and we'll finish the chapter. Text number 13. How can intelligent city women possibly trust the words of one whose heart is so unsteady and who is so ungrateful? They must believe him because he speaks so wonderfully, and also because his beautiful, smiling glances arouse their lust.
According to Sridhar Swami, some gopis were beginning to speak the first two lines of this verse, and others reply in the
second two lines. Okay. Any points here? So the most important thing to understand is that these pastimes are free from lust. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, lust is the use of one's own senses in the service of one's own sense gratification. Atmendriya Priti means I'm using my senses to please myself in a selfish way, that is lust. And the definition of prema is the opposite. We use Krishnendriya Priti, means that we use our senses in the service of Krishna's senses. That is love. And we're meant to be cultivating love for Krishna. That's the practice of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means we're practicing to re-evoke that love for Krishna, which has become covered by kaam. So we practice engaging our senses in the service of Krishna. Sarva Padi Vinimuktam Taparatvena Nimalam. And by using your senses in the service of Krishna, Taparatvena Nimalam means you become purified in your consciousness. And your upadis become destroyed. At this point in time, we are identifying with false upadis. False upadis means false identifications and bodily identification, and particular upadis means particular designations which we give ourselves in the material world. We think we're male or female. That is false according to the material designation. In the spiritual world we may be male or female, but it is not related to the male or female of the body that we currently have. You may be in a male form, but in the spiritual world you may have a female form. You may have a female form, but in the spiritual, you may have a male form. So the upadi is false at this point in time. So we give ourselves these bodily identifications, which are false, and that restricts us from understanding our relationship with Krishna. Therefore, the first teaching in the Bhagavad Gita is Yeah, we're actually a Sochananvasochastvam. So that means we are not the body. If you can't understand that, then you can't understand Krishna consciousness. So we have to give up the bodily identification. Tat paratvena nirmalam means that we have to become nirmala, which means pure, once again, which is achieved through using your senses in the service of Krishna. That is the definition of bhakti, when the senses are being used in Krishna's service. So as long as the senses are not being used in Krishna's service, you can't understand the 10th canto completely. It's always going to remain distant. We can understand it to an extent, we can understand it theoretically to an extent, but we can't realize the subject matter as long as we're engaging our senses in the service of lust. So that is the basic premise. So here it is saying in the Sanskrit, in the verse, that the gopis were aroused by Krishna's smiling glances, which aroused lust within their heart. So obviously this is not the lust which is spoken of in the material world. No? The gopis are called kam atmika devotees. What does that mean? Kam atmika. What's that? Yeah, but literally, what does kama atmika mean? Atmika means like of the self. Atma, of the self, atmika. Kama means the entire self is absorbed in kama. But it is not the material kama, it is the transcendental kama. In other words, they're attracted to Krishna as young boys and young girls. We all know because we have conditioned bodies. Young boys and young girls are attracted to each other. Right? So that attraction, that is calm. So between the gopis and Krishna, Krishna is 16, the gopis are 15. Between the gopis and Krishna, there is that feeling of calm. Spontaneous attraction based on their male-female relationship. But the calm is free from material calm. It's not lusty. It is based on prema. So it is different. So here it is saying that his beautiful smiling glances invoke their lust, but it's not, it has to, and this is why it is difficult to understand these things. It's difficult to realize this relationship because it is free from material lust. So this verse, it's a beautiful meditation, and it's a very powerful chapter and an intimate chapter and a potent chapter of the Bhagavatam, because once again, and we haven't heard this for many chapters, the gopis are directly speaking. So they've re-manifest again in chapter 65. We really haven't heard them directly speak since the late 30s or early 40s, the chapters in the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto. It's a long time since they directly spoke. And they will speak again. There's a very famous chapter coming up, chapter 83, when Krishna meets them again in Kurukshetra. And then they will speak again at that time. So this is directly the gopis speaking. So it's very elevated. It's the most elevated subject matter. So they're giving us an insight. Why are they attracted to Krishna? Because the whole purpose of our life is to become Krishna conscious. We're meant to become conscious of Krishna. We're meant to develop love for Krishna, prema for Krishna. That's the whole point of our life. I think all of us in this room, that's our goal, right? That's our main goal, to become fully Krishna conscious. It means to develop love for Krishna. So now we're hearing from those who have the most, the deepest and most powerful love for Krishna. Right? Now, to become attracted to Krishna and attached to Krishna, you have to learn about him. That's why we study the 10th canto and these other books, because we need to learn about Krishna. You can't love someone if you don't know anything about them. Just like I was speaking to one boy who's coming to the temple regularly now last week, and a Western boy, and he was saying, well, can't you realize God through Islam or through Christianity? And then I said to him that, okay, so say there's someone who lives in America who you've never met. How are you going to fall in love with them or develop an attachment to them, an attraction to them, if you don't know anything about the person? Now, you have to know what their name is, their form is, what they like, what they dislike, what they do. If you don't know these things, you can't become attached to the person. So it's the same with Krishna. We only become attached to Krishna when we learn about him. That's why it's intrinsic to study this, so that we learn about him. Srila Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, which is his summary study of the 10th canto in 1970, right? It was one of the earliest books that Prabhupada gave Krishna. And Prabhupada gave the instruction, you should read a Krishna book every night before you go to bed. And Prabhupada said, you would dream about Krishna. Yeah, does anyone read every night before you go to bed? Or some nights before you go to bed? Yeah, some devotees. Yeah, nice. You read. Do you dream about Krishna?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Nice.
Not often.
Yeah. Don't dream about Krishna. Yeah. I study it, I teach it, I do the whole thing, the 10th canto. I never dream about Krishna. I don't know what's going on. I'm not getting to where I need to in Krishna consciousness. I never dream about Krishna. Sometimes, rarely, I dream about Prabhupada, my guru, or something like that, but not regularly. So this comes when you become deeply Krishna conscious. Then Krishna will come into your dreams, Prabhupada says. So, we need to learn about Krishna. My spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said many years ago, I was listening to a lecture, and he said, one of the main reasons why devotees leave ISKCON or leave their practice of Krishna consciousness is because they don't sufficiently become attached to Krishna. Because if you are attached to Krishna, you can't leave. That's not possible. How can you leave if you're attached to him? If you love him. You know, I'm not even talking about fully fledged prema bhakti, but if you love Krishna, I think many of us love him. You know, I love him. I don't have prema, I don't have like fully fledged love, but you know, I have attraction. How can you leave Krishna consciousness? How could you leave the practice of bhakti? So the reason many people leave is because we don't develop enough attachment to him. So here, that's why we study the Bhagavatam, so you become attached to him. How do you become attached to him? You have to learn about him. We should know him intimately. Just like you think of the people you know the best in this world, you know everything about them, practically. You know, the people who you're most closest to in this world, you know so much about them. Do you know that much about Krishna? We should, because he should be the person we're most attached to. You should know everything about Krishna. You know, and the beautiful thing about studying all these literatures and studying the 10th canto, it's forcing us to study more about Krishna. And, you know, I have been studying about Krishna for many years, and I'm learning new things every week, which is very relishable. You know, you read something, now I didn't know that about Krishna. Now you read another thing, and then you learn. And it makes you more attached to him. So in this verse, it describes several things about him. First of all, it says about the way he speaks. Okay. Now, how does he speak?
Smilingly.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. What else does he? How does he speak?
He captivates the gopis' hearts by his speech. And he always has double meanings when he's speaking.
Sorry.
He always has double meanings when he's speaking. He saw that during the last lila.
What's that called in Sanskrit? The double meanings. Parokshavad. Parokshavad means?
Duplicit speech.
You know anyone who's like that? Speaks duplicitly? That's Krishna. Now Krishna speaks like that. He says one thing but actually means the other thing. All right? So that's an important thing. You have to, and that endears us to him. Does that make you attracted to him? It makes me very attracted to him. I like that. I do it all day long. And so I like it very much because I see Krishna does it. He's the master. He invented it. Krishna is the best at speaking duplicitly. So what? How else does he speak? Yeah, so if we look at the Sanskrit in this verse, that's why when we study, we have to study the Sanskrit carefully. Maybe sit on that side. Yeah, you go that side. Pull it across. That's good. So we have to study the Sanskrit carefully. Whenever we look at the verses, and it's hard because... did anyone read this section before class today? Has anyone hands up if you've read it? Okay, so I understand because we're all so busy and grihastha life is so absorbing. You know, most of the days when we're at work, we're wishing we were brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, so we actually have time to read these things. Practically, we don't even have time to read all these things. But if we do make the time, we should make the time as much as we can. We have to read the Sanskrit. And when you read the Sanskrit, that's where the deeper meanings come from in the verse. So it says specifically that Krishna's speech is chitra. Chitra means? Charming. Chitra means charming, literally. It's one of the names of the... Ashta Sakis, one of Radharani's close friends. If you're in Mayapur and you're looking straight at the altar, right? And then there are eight gopis, right? Which one is Chitra? We'll ask Radha Ballabha Prabhu. Which one is Chitra?
Next one.
I didn't ask, I said Radha Ballabha Prabhu.
She's the second.
Yeah.
On the left view.
Yeah.
On the right view.
If we're looking on our left,
yeah, that is second.
Number three, very good. I would have been disappointed if you didn't know. We should all know, but especially you should know because you see them every day. So you're building their temple, so so you should know. Yeah. So yeah, she is there. She's number the second one from our left, then Tungavidya, then Chitra, then Champakalata, and then Lalita, then Vishaka, and then
Induleka,
then Rangadevi, and then Sudevi. Yeah. So that's the order. So we should know this thing. So Chitra. And Chitra means charming. So Krishna's speech is charming. Charming means captivating. When he speaks, that's why the gopis are so attached to him. He's left Vrindavan. He left Vrindavan long time ago, but they can't forget him, right? And in these verses they say, even Balaram says, he says, when you really love someone, you can't live anymore. If you're separated from someone you really love, you'll leave your body. We gave the example last week, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's servant, Krishnadas, and he left his body out of separation from his guru. That's real love. So out of separation, but they do not leave their body, because he promised them. He said, "I will return." So that charming speech, that has captured them, that controls them. Their whole life is controlled by Krishna's speech, which is chitra. So it's beautiful speech. So that is one of Krishna's wonderful qualities. So just by reading this verse, we become more endeared to Krishna. We become more attached to Krishna. And then it says, his beautiful smiling glances arouse lust in their heart. So he smiles very sweetly. He smiles very subtly. Sometimes he has big smile, but most of the times it's very subtle. It's not, but he just has like a pleasing countenance. Smiles slightly. Quite often it says in the descriptions. He just smiles very slightly. But there's always something he's intimating just by his glances. He just looks at the gopis, and just by his eyes, because The face is the index of the mind, and the eyes, it says, are the window to the soul. So when you look into Krishna's eyes, anyone's eyes, when you look into Krishna's eyes, you see the soul manifesting. So just by his glances, then he completely captures the hearts of all of the gopis. You know? Because in his eyes, he says so many things. Yeah? And through that vision, then the gopis become completely captivated by him. So just by studying this verse, one verse alone, we become so attached to Krishna. So, any points?
The last of Kubja is pertaining.
Kubja? There's different commentaries on Kubja. Sometimes it says mixed, sometimes it says pure. It says different things. Kubja. Any other points? Okay. Why bother talking about him? Dear gopis, please talk of something else. If he passes his time without us, then we shall similarly pass ours without him. So, Janesh, you like to read on?
Lord Krishna spends his time happily without them, whereas they are most unhappy without their Lord. This is the difference between him and them. Srila Vishwana Chakravarti adds the following commentary. Considering themselves different from other women, the gopis thought as follows. If other women are together with their lovers, they leave, and if they are separated, they die. But we neither live nor die. This is the fate Providence has written on our foreheads. What remedy can we find?
So, any point?
The earlier set of gopis had calm in them. No, this set of gopis have man in them. Jealousy. So lust, some people are jealous.
Yeah, but it doesn't dissolve the calm. Yeah, it means it's all karmatmika. So it's all calm. But it's a manifestation of the calm. Any other points? So specifically, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says they're exhibiting the emotion of man. Mana means jealous anger. They're angry with Krishna, jealous. So this is very important to understand. We have to understand, especially when we're dealing with the gopis, and in particular when we're dealing with Srimati Radharani herself. Her man is pure. Her jealous anger is not material, right? It is spiritual. Where does it come from? Right. It comes from the thought or from the desire to bring Krishna back to her or bring Krishna back. The gopis are thinking, bring Krishna back to us. Now, when we become jealous in this world, it's because we're selfish. You know, we don't like, that person's enjoying. I want to be with that person. But this other person is with them. And then we become jealous. That's selfish. So when Radharani, when she thinks like that, or the gopis, when they think we're jealous that Krishna is off in Mathura or Dwarka with other people, in their consciousness they're actually thinking, no one can serve Krishna as devotedly and as perfectly as us. Not in a proud way, but realistically. So they desire, why is he wasting his time with these other people when he can be with us? That's their motivation, their consciousness. So when Radharani or the gopis, when they display this man, it is not material. It is spiritual. They're angry because they want him back. They think, why are you wasting all of your time? Right? Even in Vrindavan, when Krishna is with the other gopis, besides the left-wing gopis, when he's off with the right wing, they become angry. And Radharani, she displays this man. And if you go to Varshana, has anyone been to Varshana? Yeah. So you go to Varshana, then you go to, there's four peaks, the four hills, Lord Brahma's four heads. And one of them is called Mangar. It's specifically a place where Radharani goes when she's very upset with Krishna. Right, and then Krishna, in order to break her man, he has to dress up as a gopi. Right, and then go there and serve her, and then she breaks her anger. So once again, the Bhagavatam is teaching us everything about Krishna and the relationship with his devotees towards him. It's all based on selflessness. But these are higher subject matters, so it appears to be something else. But it's actually the opposite. It appears to be selfish, but it's actually the opposite. They're not selfish, they're completely selfless. So these are the most exalted pastimes. So, the gopis are suffering in separation from Krishna. The other key feature to understand Krishna's relationship with his associates is that we have to understand the mood of Vipralamba. And none of us really understand Vipralamba. Vipralamba is something we study and contemplate, but to really understand it, it's very, very exalted. It's very difficult. Vipralamba means separation from Krishna. It's what we're meant to feel and experience and cultivate in our relationship with Krishna. It's an extremely advanced state of consciousness where you feel separated from Krishna. Right? It's not an easy thing to attain. But if you study Shikshastika, Shikshastika is Lord Chaitanya's eight verses which he gave us, which are based upon the teachings of the Bhagavatam. The final three verses of the Shikshastika are discussing the mood of separation from Krishna. Even the fifth verse, but mainly the last three verses. They're very exalted because they describe the mood of separation. When the devotee feels separated from Krishna. Right? Now, the reason Lord Chaitanya gives us those verses and gives us this is because we're meant to contemplate and cultivate that. Because until we feel those feelings, we will not understand the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So it's somewhat beyond us at this point in time. The actual... Because the gopis are feeling intense separation from Krishna. Right? And that's described in these verses and these pastimes. Right? So much separation, yet even though they're feeling that separation so intensely that they could give up their body, they do not give up their body. Right? So they're burning in that fire of separation continuously. And Krishna is also feeling exactly the same. Remember when we studied, when he left Vrindavan, Akrura took him? What happened when Akrura took Krishna out of Vrindavan?
He was crying
all over town. He was crying, literally when they were leaving on the chariot, what happened to Krishna? Yeah, he fainted, he passed out. It was so intense, he couldn't even tolerate it, he just collapsed. Balaram had to hold him, right, as they drove out of Vrindavan. And then all the gopis fainted as they saw the chariot drive away. So Krishna himself is feeling the same. And then we also discussed, when he went to Mathura, he would stand on the balcony of his palace and he would look over the Vrindavan forest in the distance and tears would just fall from his eyes. He's feeling the same separation that they're feeling from him. And this is the essence of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is a glimpse into the heart of God. It's very exalted, not easy to understand. But this is what's being described here. It's a very exalted subject matter. Any points? While speaking these words, the young cowherd women remembered Lord Shori's laughter, his pleasing conversations with them, his attractive glances, his style of walking, and his loving embraces. Thus they began to cry.
Would have a bundle for me?
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti comments as follows. The gopis thought the Krishna moon, after piercing our hearts with the darts of his eternal laughter, went away. So how will the city woman not die when he does the same to them? Overwhelmed with these thoughts, the young coward girls began to cry, even in the presence of Sri Baladeva.
Any points? So it describes they were remembering Krishna. Remembrance of Krishna is the goal of our sadhana. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. That's the goal of everything we do. If you're chanting, if you're hearing, right, if you're doing deity worship, right, if you're doing all the yangas of bhakti and you're not remembering Krishna, then you're not achieving the goal. The goal is to remember Krishna. That's the point. All right, we do deity worship. So when you do deity worship, by hearing about Krishna, then when you do the deity worship comes to life because you're thinking while you're doing the worship about all the things you've heard about Krishna's name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his abode, his associates. All these things are meant to manifest in our consciousness. Otherwise it becomes dry and you won't maintain your sadhana over years. You see, many devotees, they become lax in their sadhana. Many devotees cannot maintain their sadhana. Why is that? Because they're not cultivating the deeper meditation while doing the sadhana. So we're meant to remember Krishna. That's the goal of our practices. Krishna's smarana. So they were remembering Krishna, and specifically it says they're remembering five things about him in this verse. What are the five things?
Name, form, pastimes, qualities.
Wrong. That's a different list. In this verse, what does it say? Five things they were remembering. It says, Krishna, Krishna's eyes are like the bows of Cupid. So you take a bow, you take an arrow, and then you fire. The arrow is fired from the bow. So these are like five ways that Krishna pierces the heart of his associates. So the first one is... his smile. That's his first. With his smile, he pierces the heart of his devotees. What is the color of Krishna's lips? Yeah, bimba fruit. What color is that though? Reddish. Yeah. What sort of red? Yeah, it's like red with like a blackish kind of mixed into it. It's like a reddish black. Krishna's lips are like that color. So, and what are Krishna's teeth like?
Jasmine buds.
Yeah, very good, jasmine buds, yeah. Yeah, it says like a string of pearls, but they have like a reddish tinge because he's always chewing on. Yeah, pan. So he's got like a reddish tinge now within his mouth. So when he smiles, like a reddish little... So yeah, like a jasmine, reddish white, and beautiful reddish lips. So when he smiles, It sends an arrow into the heart of his devotees. The gopis, Mother Yashoda, his friends. Right? It doesn't matter which rasa they're in. But when Krishna smiles, it pierces the heart. And you know, like your Guru Maharaj, when he smiles at you, it captures the heart. Have you experienced it like that? You won't see. If the Guru actually smiles at you, you almost swoon sometimes. Did you ever experience that? Sometimes I almost, you feel like you lose balance and lose consciousness for a second. When a very advanced devotee smiles at you. You can imagine if Prabhupada smiled at you or like that. Looked at you, and you would and then you get that feeling. So you get some glimpse into the experience. So it sends an arrow into the heart. It captures the heart. Second arrow. First is the smile. Second is the? It says the speech or the talks. The way Krishna speaks to his devotees. Captivates the heart. The way he speaks. Sometimes he speaks very deeply. Sometimes he speaks confidentially. Sometimes he speaks humorously. But whichever way he speaks, it captures the heart of his devotees. So first arrow, smile. Second arrow, speech. Third arrow, a glance. When he looks at the devotee, just by looking. It always says in Vrindavan, sidelong glances. Krishna looks from the corner of his eyes. He just looks at the devotee. And when he looks at the devotee, it captivates the devotee. And vice versa. When the devotee looks at Krishna, it has the same effect on him. When Radharani looks at Krishna just out of the corner of her eyes, sometimes he faints. The pastimes where Krishna faints, just when Radharani just looks at him. So you can imagine being in the spiritual world, everyone's passing out all the time. when we get back there, Krishna, there goes Krishna. There goes Radharani, there goes Lalita. Everyone's just falling all the time. There's so much emotion in all the pastimes. So then the smile, the speech, the glance, and then?
Walking.
Yeah, it's called the gate. The gate means the walking. The way he walks. How does it describe his walking?
Like an elephant.
Like a? Yeah, like an elephant. And you see the elephants when they stride. Sometimes it's like a maddened elephant. And also says like a lion. You see when the lions move like that. That's how Krishna walks, like a lion or a maddened elephant, like that. And he's so powerful. If someone walks like that, everyone looks. Krishna walks like that, or when the elephant walks like that, everyone looks. So it's just by his gait, just by the way he walks and moves, captivates everyone, sends arrows into the hearts of the devotees. And then the fifth?
Loving embracing.
Very good. Yeah, the embrace. If a very advanced devotee just touches you. If you get embraced, it's very fortunate. But even if they just touch you, it sends like an arrow into your heart. I remember my Guru Maharaj, a few times when he would touch me, it would have a deep effect on the consciousness. It's very powerful. So when Krishna embraces the devotee, it captures their heart. And actually in Sanskrit, we have this word lila. Lila means pastime. Sanatana Goswami says pastime, that word lila. One definition of lila means finishing in embrace. So all of Krishna's pastimes, they finish in embrace. That's a lila. If you have a pastime with someone and there's no embrace at the end, it's not a lila. But in the spiritual world, it always ends in embrace. Krishna has some pastimes with his friends, and then they all embrace each other at the end. Krishna has pastimes with the gopis, at the end, they embrace. Krishna has pastimes with his parents, at the end, embrace. That's a lila. So that's Krishna's lila, his pastimes. So now they're remembering these five things. What were the five?
Smile.
He smiles at us. He speaks to us. Glances at us. The way he walks. And then when he embraces us. Right? So there's like five arrows in the gopis' hearts. Right? And it's driving them mad. You'll know that you're becoming advanced when you start feeling mad, when you remember these things. At the moment, we don't feel mad. At the moment, we don't really feel anything. But when you start feeling mad just by remembering a verse like this, then you understand that you are becoming a little bit advanced in Krishna consciousness. So much so that their madness, this unmada, which is manifesting their consciousness, is so powerful. They begin to cry in front of Lord Balaram. So it's embarrassing to cry, right? If we start crying in front of everyone, if one of us start crying now, you feel a little bit embarrassed, a little bit shy. So the gopis, they're so absorbed in Krishna, and Balaram is right there, but they begin to cry. They can't control it. It's called unmada, just means completely overwhelmed in ecstasy. So powerful is their love for Krishna. So, any points? The Supreme Lord Balaram, the attractor of all, being expert at various kinds of conciliation, consoled the gopis by relaying to them their confidential messages. Relaying to them the confidential messages Lord Krishna had sent with him. These messages deeply touched the gopis' hearts. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
Sri Jiva Goswami quotes the following verse from Sri Vishnu Puran 5.24, which describes the message Lord Balaram brought from Krishna for the gopis. Sandeshe samam madurai prema dharai dharvitarai ramena ramena svasita gopya krishna yati manurai. Lord Balaram consoled the gopis by giving them Lord Krishna's most charming messages, which expressed sweet conciliation, which were inspired by his pure love for them, and which were without a tinge of pride. Srila Jiva Goswami also comments that the use of the name Sankarsana here implies that Balaram accepted Lord Krishna to appear in his mind, and in this way showed Sri Krishna to the gopis. Thus Balaram consoled Sri Krishna's beloved girlfriends. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments that Lord Krishna sent various messages. Some instructed the gopis in transcendental knowledge, others were conciliatory, and still others revealed the Lord's power. Besides its given meaning, the word Rida and Gami also indicates that his messages were confidential.
Any points?
So the Lord specifically chose Uddhava and Balaram to give these confidential messages. Vishnu Spirit Company also writes that because they were Sakyas, the Lord did not want the messages to be contaminated by Kasya or Vatsalya.
Contaminated
by Vatsalya. In the Gopal Champo also, it is mentioned that Lord Krishna's actual letter is what he writes in that letter. So the Lord is saying that, I have made many attempts, and I'm trying to convince him that I will come back. But
but somehow, you know, I said Uddhava, and I'm not sure whether the message has gotten across. So I'm going to make another attempt with Balaramji now, that I will come back. You gopis may not trust me, because you people have lost faith now that I'll come back. So to hell with me. Actually, Deva Goswami writes that, to hell with me. But why will I make a fool out of, why will I make a liar out of Uddhava or the noble, the great Balaramji? Why will they be liars? So therefore, I'm sending this. So please trust me, I will come. And then and Krishna mentions a particular time period, forgot that. And we spent this much time to come and see you.
Very nice. Yeah, so in this verse we're seeing who is delivering the message. Balaram. Who is Balaram? Yeah, he's the Adi Guru. So the Guru is delivering the message of Krishna. So every Guru is the representative of Balaram. The Guru delivers the message of Krishna. Why? To pacify the hearts of the devotees. Because on our level, we are suffering in this material world. And the words of the Guru put out the forest fire. Samsara davanala nidaloka. The words of the Guru extinguish that fire. So on the higher level, Balaram is speaking to extinguish the fire of the gopis' separation from Krishna. On our level, it means the Guru speaks to vanquish the suffering that we are going through. So Lord Balaram is speaking in this way in order to pacify the gopis. Now, it is pointed out that many messages have come. Uddhava came, Balaram is now coming, and there's many messages in between also. Not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but in other places mentioned. Krishna, there were messages going all the time. Mathura to Vrindavan, Dwarka to Vrindavan, back and forth. There was always messages. Krishna was writing letters all the time. And that was keeping the devotees alive. On one level, the Bhagavatam has not described Krishna returning. You know, it's not until they meet in Kurukshetra that there's actually a union. But the acharyas do describe that he goes back many times. So he does go back to Vrindavan. I mean, even Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he goes every day to see Radharani. Every day he manifests. So he's there, he's not there, he's there in Prakat, he's not there. There's Prakat, there's Aprakat. It's very multi-layered. But on this level, the Bhagavatam is describing that they feel that he has not returned and he has not been there for a long time. So that is true. But all the other explanations are also true. So Krishna, in one form, he is experiencing all this separation the gopis are experiencing. In another form, they're always together. In another form, he comes back regularly. In another form, he does not come back. There's all different forms which are taking place. They're all correct. So here, we're hearing that Balaram is delivering the message. And he doesn't actually speak, as Jagannath Ramprabhu pointed out, in the Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami explains the content of the message. That's not mentioned here in the Bhagavatam. But the content is mentioned, what was actually said at that time. And Balaram did not speak it in front of everyone. That's also why it's not spoken here. Balaram, you know, spoke it privately to the gopis. He met with them privately and he spoke these things. Because you can't say intimate things in front of a crowd. You know, there's things about myself I'll never say in front of all of you. You know, maybe I'll tell one or two of you privately. But I'm not going to just say, you know. Otherwise you'll stop coming to the classes. And you know, there's things we can't say. There's things I can't say about people I know. You know, because it's too intimate, it's too private. So Balaram was, he spoke to the gopis privately, confidentially, intimately. And actually, in intimate things, Burujan Prabhu said this to me many years ago. He said, confidential things should always be kept within the heart. You only reveal it to those who are very close to you. You don't just, you know, if you have realizations and things, you don't just speak them publicly. You know, if you have realizations about your relationship with Krishna and things like that, it's always spoken very confidentially. Lord Chaitanya was like that. You know? It was always confidential. The confidential topics took place in Gambira with 3.5 devotees. But it was not spoken publicly. And Prabhupada emphasized that. Do not speak these things publicly. Your private realizations, you only speak that to close associates. Any points? Is it mentioned about Balaram having his own gopis in Vrindavan? In the next 2 or 3 verses, yes. So. Lord Balaram, the personality of Godhead, resided there for 2 months of Madhu and Madhava, and during the nights he gave his cowherd girlfriends conjugal pleasure. So you did not have to wait very long. Okay, we'll read. Jumuna, you can read the.
Srila Sridharan states that the gopis who enjoyed conjugal affairs with Sri Balaram during his visit to Gokul had not taken part in Sri Krishna's rasa dance, being too young at the time. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms the statement by supporting a phrase from the Bhagavata, 4.15.8, which indicates that there are particular gopis who act as Lord Balaram's girlfriends. Furthermore, Jiva Goswami states that during the holy festivities celebrated when Krishna killed Shankaracharya, the gopis Lord Balaram enjoyed with were different from the ones Lord Krishna enjoyed with. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur agrees with this explanation.
Very good. So clearly it says Balaram's gopis are different. Right? Otherwise it would be called Rasa Basa. Krishna cannot enjoy gopis, then Balaram can enjoy. So, no, Balaram has his gopis, Krishna has his gopis, separate. It's also described that in Vrindavan, there are 12 forests, 12 principal forests. And then there are many, many sub-forests also. There are 12 principal forests. And the Jamuna comes through the middle of Vrindavan, more or less. So on the western side of Vrindavan, there are 7 forests. And in those forests, Krishna performs, he's the principal hero in the pastimes. In the 5 forests on the eastern side, Mahavan and what else is over there? Srivan, all the name, Bandiravan, all these different forests on the eastern side, then Balaram is the principal hero. So it means that's where he'll perform his Rasa Leela primarily. On the eastern side, Krishna will perform on the western side of the Jamuna. So there's no mixing. Of course, in the pastime earlier in the Bhagavatam, when Shankachuda is slain, which that pastime takes place at Govardhan Hill. Do you know where? It's in between Radha Kund and it's actually in between Kusum Sarovara and Manasiganga. And you're walking down, you go past Kusum Sarovara. You're walking down towards Manasiganga, and just on the right where Giriraj starts to come out of the ground in that place, that's where the Rasa Leela took place. When Krishna came and Balaram came, and they brought their own gopis and they danced together. Krishna with his gopis, Balaram with his gopis, and they all danced in that place together. They didn't do that regularly, but there are pastimes when they would do that. It's a separation. There's no mixing of the gopis.
Which part of this temple got in place?
What's that?
Which part is east and which part is west?
West is in the west. And east is on the eastern side. So. Does that make sense? Or? Is that what you meant?
Okay.
How does Balaram call his gopis? Krishna calls him by playing a flute.
Same.
How does Balaram call him?
Same.
Same. Yeah,
same. Because Krishna has four qualities, you know, the Rupa Madhurya, Leela Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Venu Madhurya. So Balaram also has that, those four. Balaram has everything that Krishna has.
And again, there are millions of gopis with Balaram also.
Yeah, same. All the same. Krishna, like Prabhupada said, Krishna and Balaram, I mean, it's Baladev Purnim, right? How many days? Must be like 11 days or something to Baladev Purnim. Not this Sunday, the following Sunday. So Prabhupada says they're exactly the same. It's just the colour is different. Of course, Krishna is the origin of even Balaram. That's in the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And we see that Krishna bewilders even Balaram. So we understand, but in terms of everything else there, same.
So which jivas attain that position of the gopis of Balaram?
Well, the Nitya Siddha, they're already there.
Okay. So like we see in Krishna Leela, you know,
Possibly. So even in this kind, you see there's some devotees who are just really focused on Lord Balaram. You know, some are like that. So it's there. It's obviously it's not as prominent as Krishna. You know, maybe Balaram's devotees don't fall down as much. I don't know. In the company of numerous women, Lord Balaram enjoyed in a garden by the Jamuna River. This garden was bathed in the rays of the full moon and caressed by breezes bearing the fragrance of night-blooming lotuses. So this particular place where Balaram performs the Rasa Lila is called Ram Ghat. Has anyone been there? Vrindavan? You been there? Yeah. It's up north from Vrindavan. If you're driving back towards Delhi from Vrindavan, you start driving back towards Delhi and then you cut into the right after some time and then you go, it's in there. It's further up the Jamuna. And it's where Balaram did his rasa dance. Yeah. You do it in a different place to Krishna. You wouldn't do it in the same place as Krishna. You know, the night comes, you know, Balaram runs out into the forest, Krishna runs out in the forest, but they go different places. They don't go same place. I mean, very rarely they'll merge, but usually they'll go separate. Sent by the demigod Varuna, the divine Varuni liquor flowed from the tree hollow and made the entire forest even more fragrant with its sweet aroma. Very interesting. The last line of the purport, it says, Varuni is actually Balaram's wife. She takes the form of this liquid which comes out of the trees, which everyone drinks in the spiritual world. Like that. I could do a whole class on this, but we don't have time. Here the goddess Varuni says to Lord Balaram, "My father Varuna has sent me to you, O sinless one. In the spiritual world, everyone drinks Varuni juice. We drink it once a year on Baladev Purnim down here, and it is intoxicating. Now, in the spiritual world, everyone is drinking it all the time, and everyone is intoxicated. But to drink that juice, as it says here, you have to become sinless." In other words, when you go to get back to the spiritual world and to experience all of these elements of the pastimes, you have to become completely free from sin. That's why we can't go back at the moment, because we're still sinful. We still have all the sinful desires in our hearts. So we can't go back and we can't experience. But in the spiritual world, everyone's intoxicated. You know, four things you have to do down here to get back to the spiritual world. No meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. Right? So down here you have to give up intoxication. If you give up intoxication, you become pure. You go back there and then you can drink as much as you like. Mm-hmm. But it's Varuni juice, it's different. But everyone's intoxicated. There's some pastimes where Lord Balaram walks in. He walks in, all the cat, and he's with the senior gopis, and he says, "Where is the wine?" Lord Balaram, he gets in this intoxicated mood. He walks in, means, "Where's the Varuni juice?" Not wine, not what we call wine. But he's like, he's intoxicated all the time, Lord Balaram. "Where is the wine?" He just walks in front of his seniors. "Where is the wine?" It's just like an intoxicated person. You have to chant your japa very seriously to understand these things. On Baladev Purnim, you can meditate on these things. Maybe Lord Balaram will help you to understand. The wind carried to Balaram the fragrance of that flood of sweet liquor, and when he smelled it, he went to the tree. There he and his female companions drank. So you see that picture in the temple room? You know, where he's intoxicated, his eyes are red, and he's got the plow. He said to the Jamuna, "Come here." Right? She wouldn't come, so he got the plow, he was going to hit. That's when he's like that, he's all intoxicated. So that's what's being described here, he gets intoxicated. As the Gandharvas sang his glories, Lord Balaram enjoyed within the brilliant circle of young women. He appeared just like Indra's elephant, the lordly Airavata, enjoying in the company of she elephants. At that time, kettle drums resounded in the sky. The Gandharvas joyfully rained down flowers, and the great sages praised Lord Balaram's heroic deeds. As his deeds were sung, Lord Halayuda. Actually, I wasn't going to read that verse. I got mixed up, I think. Yeah, we'll start from there tomorrow night. I was going to go to 23. I've written down 23, but I only studied to 22. So we'll finish there. Tomorrow night we'll begin 23. Tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter. Do you like this chapter? Very well. Too sweet. So nice. Please keep up with your fees for the course. Tomorrow night we will finish this chapter. And then... Yeah, we'll continue. Srila Prabhupada ki.